Hey everybody, this is Tuesday at 4 o'clock, Voices from the Front Lines, your national movement building show, and I think there's an election today. In fact, I know there's an election today, and I am honestly telling you that I'm having a heck of a time getting my head around it. Normally, I really take these elections very seriously, which doesn't mean I shouldn't, but I'm simply trying to explain to you that I know a lot of KPFK listeners just don't like the Democratic Party at all and don't like the two-party system at all, which I don't either, and in some way denigrate the elections of the two parties, and for some good reasons. But I generally, depending on the historical moments, see important fault lines in society that a movement can take advantage of. We don't control the two parties, needless to say. But to dismiss the fact that there's any struggle between them, there's any issues between them, I don't agree with. So in 2008, I was obviously very enthusiastic about the Barack Obama candidacy, and I wrote to the movement about my views on that. And I'm glad I did. But let me tell you, it's a test of my theories to watch the Obama administration carry out so many, not just bad, but very, very, very destructive policies. And then we had the election in 2012 between President Obama and Mitt Romney. And again, I did feel, in my opinion, that the re-election of a black president was really critical, and certainly that the Mitt Romney fiasco could not be allowed to pass. But thrilled? No, I wasn't, but still happy on a strategic level. But now we're in 2014, and this is called the off-term elections or the midterm elections. Obviously, the president is not running, although he's a surrogate, as they say, on a lot of different ballots. But there still are issues. There are really important issues that are not particularly about the two parties. On the two-party system, which we want to talk about, and there are people, one thing I've learned is if you don't exactly know what you're talking about, bring people in who do. So here are the things I'm trying to figure out. For progressives at the national level, what are we rooting for? I listened to Rachel Maddow last night, and I had to say it was pretty sad. I mean, the best that these Democratic strategists could say is, interestingly, they do expect a Republican landslide today. Not to say there will be, but they expect it. And then they're explaining how, well, that still could be a good thing because then for 2 years, the Republicans are going to be seen as the party of obstruction. And in 2016, the Democrats will come back in because there's a growing demographic around blacks and Latinos. There's a reduced number of whites in the electorate. And therefore, blah, 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 blah. But they're not talking about ISIS. They're not talking about the United States as a world policeman. They're not talking about Ferguson, Missouri. They're not talking about Trayvon Martin. They're not talking about No Cars, No Way. They're not talking about Prop 47. They're just talking about the two parties and how MSNBC is a Democratic Party television station. So we're all supposed to be very excited that the value of the Democrats losing this year is how great it'll be for them when, I guess what, Hillary runs in 2 years? So, folks, in that context, I just can't get my head around this election. I can't get my heart around this election. There are particular pieces of the puzzle, but at the national level, the repudiation of Obama, which is going to be the main theme, the crazy Tea Party people, the two-party split inside the Republican Party, is Mitch McConnell going to be? I just can't follow it, and I guess I could, but I don't have the stomach to follow it because I just don't see how this is a great terrain. One more thing before I get to our guest, though. Let's assume today that the Republicans have a landslide. Let's be very clear. President Obama still has enormous executive power. He doesn't need anything to go through the two houses of the Congress. You'll be shocked at how much power he has under the 1964 Civil Rights Act, and you know how much power he has because he just declared a world war against ISIS that was not voted. So anytime a president wants to do something, very frankly, the executive authority is quite broad. When he doesn't want to do something, he says that his hands are tied by the Republicans. So it's going to be quite a charade. The pressure on the president, if there's a Republican landslide, could be continued. But here's a couple of issues that I think are important. And like I said about surround yourself by people that know things. So One of the people that is, I hope, is on the line, is he already? Is Gihon Pereira, who's been an old friend and comrade of mine, and he's working with something called the Florida New Majority. He's done a lot of thinking about a Black-Latino alliance. He is working in some ways inside the Democratic Party as well as outside the Democratic Party. He's trying to figure these questions out. Florida is a very important state. We also have with us Philip Agnew, who's done some terrific work with the Dream Defenders. A lot of you know, during the whole Trayvon Martin campaign, the wonderful work they did in Florida, the fight against Stand Your Ground. So these are two brothers who I do care what they think. In fact, have a lot to learn. So, Gihon, are you on?
Yeah, I'm on. And, Eric, it's great to be on with you.
And Philip, you there?
Yes, I'm on. We're actually in the same office here, so this is good.
That's really good. See this worldwide
network. We call it the Rebel Stronghold over here.
That's right. You see this worldwide network. We have fans that we got two great leaders to show up at the same time and place. So let's start about the denial of the vote. Let's start there before we get to what we're voting for. What's going on in Florida?
Well, I'll start it off. Right now, the polls have just closed 7 minutes ago. There's still people in lines throughout the state. The real question has been how much people will actually turn out for this midterm election, given the blasé of the politics and general downturn, particularly amongst Black voters and Latino voters in midterm elections. And so everyone's been really looking to see what the Black and Latino turnout was going to be, which really will be the difference maker in this governor's election that's happening here. And as everyone knows, we have been the poster child for stolen elections, bad votes, late votes, et cetera, et cetera. We had in the run up to 2012 a legislature and led by the governor and an extreme right Republican Party that fashioned laws to specifically suppress the Black vote by changing voter registration laws, by getting rid of early voting and the Sunday before the election, which is traditionally when the African-American community and churches mobilized to the vote. The governor, who is running this time, Rick Scott, did deliberate purges of Latino voters and people with immigrant last names. So all of that's been the story of Florida and in the run-up to this election. We've beaten a number of those things back, but there is still great suspicion of and a great sense of the fact that there is a great amount of attempt to suppress the Black and Latino vote.
Well, let me ask you this before we go to Philip. I think Gihon, both Philip, the three of us, do think that the Black-Latino Alliance is the critical fulcrum for any possibility of progressive, radical, or revolutionary possibility in the United States. How's it going in terms of the consciousness, Gihon, of the two communities grasping themselves as allies? And I guess one way we would analyze whether or not the election, we always ask the question, what does victory look like? I would certainly think that the acceleration of the fight to defend the vote is a critical victory. How's that going on the ground?
I'll let Phil take that too, but it's interesting. You know, we just, both of us were on telephone town hall with Black and Latino voters on Sunday night, and we had about 19,000 voters on the phone with us. And we had a conversation about criminal justice system, and Maria Rodriguez, who's one of our key leaders here of the immigrant rights movement, two Black state senators, Phil, myself, were on. And I think what's really interesting is that, you know, especially with the failure of federal immigration legislation, that the immigrant rights movement is really looking at the deportation issues as its central axis of fight. And of course, here in Florida, in the Black community, we've had Trayvon, we have Jordan Davis, we've had all of these instances of state violence, and then, you know, Ferguson to boot. So I think really criminal justice and the prisons and the private prison system here, which is what a lot of people, including Phil and his crew, have been working on, is really the central axis around which a Black-Brown unity, I think, can be built and is starting to be built in the streets. What is really interesting to me is that quite often these the prison and criminal justice issues are really framed almost as just a Black issue, when in fact, especially with the growing Puerto Rican community here, but, you know, throughout the state, Latinos are quite often just as suspect and just as caught up in the criminal justice system as African American and Black folks. So I really think there's a unity there, both between the immigrant rights movement, but between Latinos and Blacks overall around what's happening with mass incarceration here in the state.
Well, Philip, I know, you know, we've met each other and know each other's work, and I think you've done really, I'm just very impressed by the constant effort to figure out Dream Defenders, to keep evolving it. What's it like on the ground now in terms of, let's start with not just the black community, but in terms of the black community, what's the conversation going about this election? Tell me a little bit about the governorship and how they understand it, which I don't. Let's talk about ballot initiatives that are going on in Florida. What's the level of consciousness and what are people think they're fighting for?
Well, so we primarily are working with younger folks and students, college-age students and some high school students, right, who are voting for the first time. And what we're hearing and what we're seeing is twofold. So we can't overlook the history of Florida as it pertains to voting, Gore versus Bush, where we watched our state and the leaders in our state steal an election, right? And so what that has done for generations that follow has really been debilitating. I mean, there's a culture of really feeling like our votes really do not matter. And to boot, they will not be counted. And there's proof, right, that that may be a true assumption, and so they may not be too far off. And so we are hearing that, and we're also hearing, Eric, that, listen, we're deciding between a Republican and a former Republican.
Right.
And so even if you are like us and you want to be engaged and it's very, very exciting for you to go and vote, you kind of feel a little bit dirty doing some of the work and circling that bubble for Charlie Crist. I went and voted today, and it didn't feel like a vote for anything. It was more against Rick Scott and against the last 4 years more than it was for Charlie Crist. And so, you know, we're hearing and we're seeing out on my timeline and on the people I've been talking to, people have been voting. I'm looking forward to seeing how it shakes out today. I hope that we don't have to go to a recount. But quite frankly, people are sick of what's going on. But there isn't an excitement about us being able to build something. It's really just fighting back against 4 years of a regime that took away early voting, that made it that much harder for immigrant communities to find safety and a pathway to citizenship, that took away Medicaid and denied health care to millions of people, that brought so many low-wage jobs into the state that people can get two of them and still not make ends meet. And so it's really just us trying to get back to level, and that's how people are feeling. We're just trying to get back afloat. And then maybe in the next 4 to 8 years, we've been saying we're moving with 2020 vision, because this is just a building to something else in another year. So that's what we're hearing. And the ballot initiatives, man, we've got, you know, medical marijuana on the ballot. And you asked about the consciousness of our community. I'll say it's high, because we know that even if it does pass, that won't trickle down to the corner boys, and that won't trickle down to many of the communities, and black and brown poor communities that are criminalized for the sale of marijuana. And it also is a little bit of irony that for years, reefer madness swept the country until some older white guys found out how to get money from it, and now people are clamoring to find a pathway and a gateway to making it legal. And so the consciousness is high, but I think the anger about the last 4 years is not going to keep some of the people that we've talked to away from the polls.
The voice you heard is Philip Agnew, and the voice you heard before that is Guion Pereira. Philip, let me just stay on that line of questioning a little bit. I think one thing in terms of the history is I think it's important to tell people that the Republicans did not steal Florida, that Al Gore gave it away, that the black community, the black community desperately begged Gore. There's pictures of Maxine Waters, of other black elected officials begging Gore to challenge that election, telling him, and he looks them straight in the eye and says, no, I'm not going to do that in the interest of the two-party system. So it's real important, since we both want to build an independent political movement, don't you think, to challenge that myth that good old Al Gore was all about to be elected until the Republicans stole it?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is Guion again. And Eric, you know, I would say two things on that. Yes. The other thing, I mean, there's both the fact that, you know, I was here during that election, watched it. It really changed my consciousness about, like, how to intervene and participate and how what we can do in these elections. Al Gore both gave it away and, you know, really punked out. And the right wing was very serious about using every tactic in its disposal to hold on to power. You know, we saw a bunch of goons storm into the Miami-Dade clerk's office while they were doing the recount, disrupt it, and allow the time for the Supreme Court to stop it. So they acted in their interest, and Al Gore sold out ours. And I think the, I grew up, and I know you from coming up in L.A., and I grew up in radical politics on the left coast out there, and I was absolutely against electoral politics until I got to Florida. And, you know, I think it's important for listeners in California to kind of understand the context out here. Our governor, Rick Scott, his first act as governor when he got into power was to, his first public appearance was at a Tea Party rally. He didn't go, wasn't at a rally at the state capitol. He wasn't at a rally in some public place. His first public appearance was at a Tea Party rally. And since then, he's done everything that, Phil talked about in terms of suppressing the votes, but he's been a complete ideologue in moving right-wing, like extreme right-wing policy and practices. And it puts us in a situation here where we have to do two things at once. We, one, have to kind of figure out how to build a united front against the extreme right, which is in power and moves against our communities every day. And then, secondly, how do we within that build an independent politics? And so it's a dance, right? So here on the call that we had on Sunday night, we had two black senators who were Democrats building, and talking about the need to get rid of Rick Scott. And at the same time, we then have to build our independence because the people in the street don't feel like that existing parties have a message or a program that really speaks to them. So we have to be able to do both things. And I think part of what we're trying to do is then say, in that context, how do we start developing a political program, a set of demands that excite people and that are really about what people would be willing to fight for while still dealing with the realities of our state in a mass way?
Well, just one thing before I go back to Philip, and that's great. I mean, I think you know, Gihan, that we don't see ourselves on the left coast. We see ourselves in the heart of the black and Latino oppressed nations in the United States, in Los Angeles. And a new campaign we've come up with is called No Cars in L.A., No Tanks in L.A., No Stop and Frisk in L.A., Not One More Deportation in L.A. And what we're doing for the first time and under the Fight for the Soul of the Cities is we're challenging the entire auto industry and the whole use of autos and fighting for free public transportation. Then we're moving for No Tanks in L.A. because under the Defense Department's 1033 program, they're giving, as you know, both of you, Philip, you were in Ferguson, the tanks, literally, that the Los Angeles Unified School District has, their police department has tanks, grenades, rocket launchers, unbelievable. We're demanding that they give us an inventory first of all the weapons that they've gotten under the program, and two, then we're calling it burn them, don't return them, which is we don't want these used against people in the third world. We just don't want these weapons to exist at all. And then the no stop and frisk, we just came back from the Los Angeles MTA where we were negotiating with the sheriff and others, and they are literally arresting, over 130,000 people for not paying their fares and making fare evasion into a crime. And then the not one more deportation, we have something called 287G here, which is a program between the sheriff and ICE and the Homeland Security, in which if you're arrested in L.A. County, they turn you over to the Immigration Authority. So the idea of developing a coherent program and trying to organize people around the concept of a program more than even a compilation of issues is just to tell you, because we're excited about it, something going on, that we're trying to shape the terms of the debate. Be interested in what you both think of that. But more importantly, since today's the election, my point is that today in California, we have a big vote on this Prop 47. And obviously, when there is something to be excited about, our people understand the importance of the electoral system. So I want to go back to you, Philip, about you say you're working in the high schools, you're working with young people. And I'd love to hear both of you, by the way, your thoughts about I'm calling the four no's. What can you tell people right now? I think what you said about the medical marijuana was great. Can you sell people on strategy? Can you explain to them that there's nothing great right in front of your face, but the strategy is what's important? Is that what you're trying to do?
Yeah, that's absolutely the whole conversation. And listen, so we were at Florida A&M's homecoming last week, and we had a march to the polls where students met us early in the morning, and we marched over and early voted, right? And so during that time, we had people filling out pledges, and we engaged them in some conversations about the issues and what issues were important to them and the problems that they're facing and how they affect it. And you all actually, you know, Eric, you helped to develop our pledge, and so I appreciate that. And so we, you know, the whole conversation has to be steeped in reality, but led with a vision and a program. And that's what you're talking about. You're talking about developing a revolutionary radical program that people can subscribe to, knowing, as Gihan said, that we're grounded in a reality that we have a Republican-led legislature, that right-wing extremists run all corners of our government, that corporate interests have ran the election this year. We've got to be steeped in that reality, but know that what we say around voter suppression and the culture of not wanting to vote is that if your vote meant nothing, then why do you think there are interests that invest millions of dollars into making sure that you don't vote, you don't think about the importance of voting, and you're not interested in doing it at all? And so you've got to look at where the energy is focused in, and the energy right now is focused in suppression, in ensuring that felons can't get their rights to vote back or returning citizens, once they come home, can't get their citizenship rights back. And so these are the areas where we're developing a program to combat it. And it's all around a vision of building power, building independent power that allows us to have self-determination. And that is what we're telling folks, that, listen, this is not about today. I didn't come here with a short sale. I didn't come here to even fool you and let you think that when you go into the ballot box on Tuesday that the choices that you are making aren't predetermined for you. But that doesn't mean that we can sit out of the game. Not voting is voting. Don't talk crap to me from the sidelines. Don't act like you're a pseudo-revolutionary on every election day and talk bad about people that are engaged in the process in the way that they have to be engaged in the process. Let's build something together, and we don't build by sitting on our behind. And so what we're telling people is that we've got 50 arrows in our quiver. You know, we're David fighting Goliath, and we've got 3 stones, and we cannot leave any stone unthrown. And so we're going to vote, and on November 5th, we're going to get to work with whoever we're going to be fighting for the next four years. I'm most excited about knowing who I'm going to do battle with, who's going to be the guy in the other side of the ring that we're going to fight. And that's what we're telling people. It's got to be around a vision that we can build something better, but it starts today, and it actually starts with us kind of at a handicap.
Well, I just want to give you both a last remark, but I want to support, and not just support Philip, but totally respond and agree with what you're saying. My wife, Leanne, and I, we vote very seriously when she's up, waking me up, you know, what's up? All right, what's our position on this one? What's our position on that one? Because I saw people, not just one or two or 10 or 100, I saw people die for this vote. I saw black people as early as 1945 standing up in Louisiana and risking their lives. And the concept of voting, which black people, I think, are the ones who understand the most, is not because they want a little piece of this rotten system, but it's fundamental to self-determination. It's fundamental to self-respect. And as you said, I think it's a great slogan. If your vote is so unimportant, why are they spending billions of dollars to try to take it away from you? And I think voting rights, the whole concept of what we call democratic rights, is revolutionary in this country, precisely because of how reactionary this country is. So, you know, we're totally on the same page, which is why I wanted you both to be on the show today, because I knew we weren't going to be mainly talking about candidates, but we're talking about building, including a voting rights movement. So maybe you both, I mean, I'd love to have you both on. Again, I'm going to, why don't you both maybe make your just last thoughts? So, Gihan, maybe a minute of a little bit of wrap-up, last thoughts you want our friends to think about, because this is a national show, and then Philip, and we'll have you on again.
Well, it's great to be on, Eric, and you know, I would say that I just really appreciate what you originally put out around the four no's and this question of strategy and vision, as Phil said, too. You know, what we see is that these elections, and because of the amount of suppression and high right-wing ideology around it here and what's at stake, it's really an opportunity for us to have a mass conversation. In these last 6 weeks, throughout the state, we knocked on over 125,000 doors. We talked to close to 40,000 people at their homes. In these last 3 teletown halls that we had a Latino teletown hall in Spanish, a Black Votes Matter with the black community, and then a unity town hall. Combined, there were 60,000 black and Latino voters that participated in that. And it's a chance to have a conversation that's not just about the candidates, but really to start forming a consciousness around with the black and Latino community and in alliance, what is our agenda. And I think that that agenda is actually served by strategy and vision. If you look at the medical marijuana amendment here, in fact, I think it has a good chance of losing tonight, strictly because instead of talking about the criminal justice implications, instead of talking about the drug laws, instead of talking about marijuana as a political issue, they pitched the campaign purely as a health care and medical issue, which did not properly then excite our communities because they understand it as all of those things. And so I think in our conversations, what we are trying to do is do exactly what y'all are doing in LA, which is take the practical work and really connect it to people's possibilities and what a vision of a real liberatory politics could be. And so I appreciate what y'all are doing there and appreciate being on the call. And I think the more we really get into this practice, that we're going to really birth something new.
And before I get to you, Philip, just to respond, Gihan, that, you know, when I was right after Mississippi, the 50th anniversary of Mississippi Summer, I was fortunate to come to Miami at Gihan Pereira's initiative. I got to meet Philip Agnew, who I'd always heard about, and meet some just wonderful people in Miami. And the great thing about being an organizer is it's depressing being a Democrat. It's not depressing being an organizer, you know? I mean, really, we work in these elections, but listening to two of you does make me get very excited, and let's keep going. Philip, what's on your mind?
Yeah. Oh, well, first I'm honored to be on with you, Eric, and especially Gihan. He's opened up this office to us and definitely been someone that helped develop Dream Defenders since the very beginning, 2 years ago. And, you know, I think just to end it, I think we should all just think about the moment that we are in. We are in a moment where democracy is in crisis in very real ways. And the only people that can save democracy are black, brown, and oppressed folks who take ownership of their existence and are taking back in real ways the narrative around the country. And we're in a place, I think, also where capitalism and imperialism is in crisis. And it's very important and very exciting to be here in this moment. Everyone is talking about Ferguson. Everyone is talking about state violence and police brutality. And, you know, 50 or 40 years ago, a politic was advanced that said that we are occupied communities and the police are an extension of an oppressive force. And it allowed for not only for communities to figure out how to fight back, but for communities across racial lines to begin to have a conversation about a common enemy and a common struggle and a common strategy for liberation. And I think we're in a time like that again. I don't know if we'll be celebrating the day. I don't know if Charlie Crist wins, if we will be celebrating. But this opportunity that we have is one that we can't skip over. I'm excited to be here and be with you all, and looking forward to just learning more. And over the next 4 years, in the next 2 years, and the next 6 years, building towards something where we are not so much on the defensive, but able to fight an offensive battle. And that's only going to come through the conversations that Gihan and other folks around the state and Maria have been leading around black and brown unity.
Well, pretty wonderful. The voice you just heard was Philip Agnew from the Dream Defenders, and before that was Gihan Pereira from previously the Miami Workers Center as well, and now the Florida New Majority. Great to have both of your brothers on. The revolution will continue, and we'll be in touch very soon.
Here comes the sun.